The Ocelli Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck Ocelli.
April 17, 2023, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. This, indeed, is the show you are looking for. Guess how I know that? Because you're hearing me say what I'm saying. Anyway, welcome to Monday, and this is a little different. If you're hearing us on the live stream, you know we've gone to air a little early now. But that's all right. I'm happy with this. And I'm also very happy with the guest I have today. Couple of pieces of business I'm going to get out of the way really fast. Also, this will be available, if you're hearing just the audio as you usually do, on the various platforms, you know, the applicable applications, the podcatcher du jour, whatever it may be, through your fondle slab of choice. If you're doing all that, great. Happy to have you along, but you could be watching this on video, and if you're doing that, that means you're on Rockfin or Rumble, because nobody else has the Ocelli Effect. So there you go. I'm glad that I'm doing the video tonight. Had to. Why? Well, it's a good idea to show you that I can occasionally have a conversation with a much more civilized individual than myself. And this is visual proof in case somebody thinks this is a deep fake. We could get into other deep fakes, and we just might. I don't know what the conversation is, because as per usual, no script, no choreography. But before we get there, just really fast, I did have some fun with the mail today, and for some reason, my journalist friend in California keeps having his mail returned to me. That's JP Satilli, in case you caught that. If you didn't, you don't need to. But I keep having mail returned to me as if there is no such person for some odd reason. Of course, someone has sliced it open every single time, and I'm getting that feeling of the ghost of J. Edgar Hoover here with the mail reading, but I'm one of those crazy conspiracy theorists, right? Meanwhile, just really quickly, an update as far as the Dallas trip goes. I do have now a full box of one of the books by the great author William Mattson Law, who wrote In the Eye of History. That would be this book here. In the Eye of History, which is a concise thing about the JFK assassination and all that. But I don't have a crate of those to offer. I do have, on the other hand, this book called Betrayal, which I'm going to have William on to discuss very soon. It's not a brand new book, but it just so happens I have, I don't know, about a dozen copies here that are signed by the author. And I'm thinking either there'll be thank you gifts to those of you who have supported the show, or maybe we'll offer a couple for sale, try and fund that Dallas trip. We'll see how it goes. All right, I'm all done. Oh, except I have been making some rounds trying to get the test hats done as well. You guys have been asking for them. So far, this is not satisfactory to me. I may just give this away to somebody. Let's see what happens. But we are working on it, just so you know, and there will be a hat for each of the shows that I produce. Okay. Now that I've gotten all that business out of the way and I wanted to make sure we put it on video, I'm sure you'll hear from me again about it, but I do forget to promote. Let's get to the real business of the day. And I don't mean the ridiculous news feed or what it is Droolin' Joe has said lately. No. I mean, do we want to have the gun debate again? Do we want to talk about Memphis? Do I want to talk to you about that abortion pill? No, I don't. But who knows? Maybe my guest does. Maybe he wants to relax. You know what? I want to give him free rein because the man works hard. You might not think this because, well, I'm a little less civilized than he is, generally speaking. But considering the fact that I do have respect for him, and he's one of the few that comes out of certain circumstances that I do have respect for, it's going to be an interesting conversation. I don't even know if he's ever actually heard of me. So not sure about this. Now, I know he's got friends that have heard of me because we've heard from people that do a little thing called Knights of the Storm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A bit.
Absolutely. And the mutual friends.
There it is. The much yes. Smoother and dulcet tones of David Knight. How you doing, David?
Oh, thank you, Chuck. Thank you for having me on. I really do appreciate it. I do appreciate the Knights of the Storm. They're starting to get a community, and it's great. And I'm glad to see that happening. People of integrity, too.
People of integrity, much like you. This is the interesting thing. From afar, you and I have never had a conversation, not even privately.
Right.
You know, so I love this. This is great because this means that each of us could pick each other's brains, discuss what's happening right now. I mean, you may or may not like my current T-shirt that somebody sent me. It is a Trump 20, 2024 t-shirt, not because I'm part of MAGA Nation, but it's actually the years in prison. It says lock him up. Now, look, it's a joke. I love wearing shirts with cartoons on it. I don't think he's going to get locked up. Do I appreciate Trump? No, I don't. And you might be able to tell from my accent. I'm from that area of the country. Grew up in New York and New Jersey, right? So I might have different reasons for already saying, you know, a real estate hustler from Queens might not be the best idea if you want a leader. But hey,
or a casino operator.
Who figured out a way to lose money in Atlantic City with a casino, which, by the way, is rather difficult. I mean, listen, props for accomplishing a difficult task, David. It is very difficult to do that.
Maybe math is not his strong point if he can't run a casino and win. Because, you know, they say that casinos were people who were bad at math. Well, maybe if you got a casino owner who goes out of business, he's really bad at math, I guess. I don't know.
Well,
I thought it was interesting.
The house is always supposed to win, David.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, but if you don't know how to keep your own house in order, there might. Okay, sorry. I don't want to talk about Trump.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll tell you what. I just shut off the air conditioner because it was. It's making noise behind me. I don't want it. But you know, so fully live. I'm not going to edit this, by the way. So you guys, I hope you appreciate this. This will be uncut with David Knight. And I promise I'm not going to talk over you so much. I want to actually get to know you a little bit because I have listened to you for many years. I used to listen to you on another platform where quite often you would come in and you had a very smooth voice. And it was so much better to not have the anxiety-driven stuff that was being fed to me through that very same channel when I used to listen to it. You might guess that I'm not a current listener of that old platform you used to be on.
Me neither.
Fair enough. But some good people were there and came out of there, and you're one of them. So,
thank you.
Point is, I want to get into that with you, but I don't want to do it in the pedestrian way that other people have, okay? Mm-hmm. I want to ask you a little bit about that. I want to ask you about what it was like to come out and do your thing. I mean, it's logical. You got a great marketable name right away. You got a chess piece in your logo. You're clearly a likable guy. Again, automatically respectable. You're wearing a suit. You look like the kind of guy that I do want to pay attention to just off the bat. You make that right first impression. I mean, all of that. And yet, you're immersed in a landscape where there are privileged some, okay, who do get a lot of backing and well taken care of. I'm not going to ask you to make any sort of, you know, judgments about that right now. I want you to talk about you. Coming from that organization and the background that you had previous to that, and now going into the independent world as a guy who's not in his 20s, okay? I mean, neither am I. I know I look probably way older than I am, but I'm in my 50s now, and I didn't even get into this until into my 40s. Mm-hmm. You're already a seasoned veteran, smooth and ready to handle things. I mean, why is it that you are not even a larger presence in the media right now? I don't know, because quite frankly, I'd rather listen to you than a lot of other people out there. And I haven't spoken about you much on the show. Other people have come on and done it for you. Okay, and done it for me. So, you know, they're like, the Knights of the Storm guys. I love those guys. They're a little rough around the edges. But anyway, could you help me out and tell me a little bit about that transition from being part of an organization like that and having had, you know, a bit of a seasoning, a bit of a history previous to that as well, and then coming into your own situation? It might be boring to your listeners, but I'd like to hear your version of that in short.
Sure. Well, it was a bigger adjustment for me going into InfoWars than it was coming out of InfoWars, to be honest with you. I had mostly been behind the cameras. I had done some voiceover work for some of I was doing a lot of contests back in 2008, 2009. There were a lot of opportunities for crowdsourced contests. And when I saw something is done by a conservative organization, I was on it, and I usually did pretty well with it. There was one that was done by FreedomWorks, and it was being run by Dick Armey, and it was about small business entrepreneurship. And it's like, that's a perfect fit for me. And I won that contest, won a trip to Chicago and things like that. So there was a lot of those that I did in 2009, and all of a sudden that just kind of dried up, and I started doing some of the contests for InfoWars. And even though I didn't win the contest, it was Jakari Jackson who won the contest. I got hired because Alex hired a bunch of people at that time. And when I went there, I had been doing work that was supporting particular issues. So I'd worked for, in terms of politics, I'd worked for political parties, third-party candidates, things like that, just off and on work. Also worked for a think tank that was fighting the climate change stuff that we, you know, fighting against climate gate, trying to get information, data, actually, from Michael Mann, who had done the hockey stick thing that was used so much by Al Gore in his movie. And so we said, we'd like to see your data, because he was mentioned in ClimateGate as people said, hey, our models don't work and we got to hide the decline in temperature and so forth and so on. So we said, we'd like to see your data because you're working for the government, the state of Virginia. You're working at University of Virginia at the time. And these are emails that were on the university computer. You've published this data, so there's nothing that needs to be hidden from this, and it's already been used to create public policy, so we'd like to see that data. Isn't it interesting that we see all this stuff coming back now with the pandemic, right? We'd like to see your data. Sorry, you can't see the data with any of this stuff, whether you're talking about the vaccine or you're talking about the pandemic or the cases of this. They hide everything. So I had done that kind of work, and then I didn't win the contest, but as he made the job offer to me, which I thought was really kind of strange, I wasn't really sure that I wanted to do that. Wasn't sure I wanted to make the move. We liked it back east. We liked it in North Carolina where we were at the time. And I had lived in Texas before. I wasn't really too happy about going back because of the climate and other things like that. But I decided to take the job, and I was doing reporting work. I was there at the Bundy Ranch in 2014. I really wanted to go to that. That was the first time I did any live reporting because on-location reporting, I wanted to do that because I thought that was going to devolve into another Waco. And I think it probably would have if it hadn't got a lot of attention.
Well, so, can I tell you a little something about that? I had a friend who was a correspondent on the ground, and really there were very few people that were covering this that weren't, you know, directly. Like, everybody was reading about it and so on and so forth. You might have run into a character named Vince Eastley while you were there, because Vince would introduce himself to everybody. And he was a friend of mine. We were on the same
team. Like you said, it was small until the end of the week. And then the end of the week, all of a sudden, all the mainstream media came in. You know, Fox News was there and CNN was there. And then they all packed up and left before everything happened on that Saturday.
Exactly. That was the crazy thing, is that, like, those of us that actually covered it end to end, there was a whole dynamic there. And I felt as though it was a successful situation.
Yeah,
no one died.
That's right.
No one died.
And they were able to, one of the things that I thought was different was, you know, even though Cliven Bundy was, you know, pretty much set up in some of these questions that came to him from people like Glenn Beck, you know, are you a sovereign citizen? You know, well, I don't know. He didn't know what a sovereign citizen was, but he was really smart. He and his sons were smart about the way they set this thing up. And all the mainstream media was told, hey, this thing's resolved. We're going to give them the cattle back and, you know, they'll be fine. And, you know, it's going to just tamp down. And he wasn't happy with that. And, you know, they said, well, they didn't say they were going to give them the cattle back. They said that they were going to let them graze and that type of thing. But there's still a question as to whether or not they're going to get the cattle back. And so they had already worked up the fact that there was going to, you know, they were going to go there and demand the cattle be back. And that's where the standoff developed. But they had an obtainable goal. That was the key thing. It wasn't just that, you know, we're angry and we're here and we're going to do a sit-in and we're going to yell and scream about this. I don't really care about protests like that, but they had an obtainable goal, which was to get the cattle back and to be able to graze them there. They were the last farmers, ranchers that were left in that area. They'd run everybody else off. And so from that standpoint, the fact that nobody died, nobody was shot, and the fact they got the stuff back, I thought it was a big success. And I think they did a great job with that. I was just there to cover it. I didn't have anything to do with their success.
Well, you see, now you say to yourself, look, you were just there to cover it, but that was a key issue. And I'll tell you why it was a key issue. If you take a look at the next thing that involved individuals that were connected to Bundy, okay, now I'm not asking you to make any judgments here, but the fact is that due to the situation being that there was not consistent coverage on it, okay? Mm-hmm. A lot of things were allowed to happen where you didn't have an objective journalist sitting there, okay, who was documenting what was happening without participating in it. Now, I know that the courts wound up ruling in somebody's favor there and saying, yes, you were a journalist, we let you go. After a certain amount of time and all that, I'm not going to ask you to, you know, look, we only have so much time.
Yeah, yeah. It was being controlled, and they tried the same journalists until they tried to do the same thing at Bundy Ranch. Right. I wasn't at the Malheur standoff, and it was very unfortunate how that happened. And I've got a lot of questions about what was really being done about that.
Exactly. And the thing is, I was in contact with some of those fellows, Jason Patrick, for instance, you know, directly. I live in Georgia now. Again, I grew up in the Northeast, but I live in Georgia now. And the thing is, I was constantly telling them, look, you need to replicate that situation from before. Otherwise, something is going to go wrong. And quite honestly, nobody wanted to listen to me. And within a week, you know what happened. And quite frankly, I was trying to get Jason onto Ground Zero Radio the night he was arrested. Mm-hmm. Look, I'm not trying to go into the personal issues on this. All I'm saying is that there is an important role that can be played by a journalist who is there. Believe it or not, it can serve to be protective, okay, yeah, if the journalist is doing a legitimate job and actually covering it. And, you know, without it, other things can happen. All of a sudden, we're relying on law enforcement's body cams and whose report says what. And, oh, these guys who have been painted this way, that way, the third way in the propaganda war, now we're looking at them and going, well, you know, whose side is what? You have an objective journalist there who is actually documenting it, who is reporting on it. The public is aware of it in real time, number one. Number two, you have this objective element there that, you know, we can have our sympathies any which way that we want. But if we behave in such a way that we are there to document what's happening and to allow the circumstances to be known outside of the observable area, this is the job there. Now, that's not always your job as a talk show host. I mean, David, you and I can sit here and make jokes for the next half hour.
That's right.
We're here to entertain to some degree, to inform, to entertain, to enlighten, to inspire. You could take it a whole lot of different ways. But a journalist, it almost seems like journalism, by the way, is nearly dead. And I don't mean to just go after the people that are the newer wave, the citizen journalists. God bless them. A lot of them are doing really better than what those people that are getting those good corporate paychecks are. And, of course, there's a huge difference between the reporter and the journalist, okay? You know, the talking head on TV, not necessarily a journalist. They could be just reading a script. You and I both know this very well. But the public seems to, I don't know, sort of make a confluence of a creative idea of what the news should be. And that's what they go with, as opposed to taking a look at the documentation, actually journaling a circumstance. There is a huge philosophical difference, and it's not just academic.
If you're there and you're taking pictures, for example, shortly after the Bundy Ranch, went to Bilderberg in Denmark, in Copenhagen, and it was different from all the other Bilderbergs as far as I could tell. I don't know any other Bilderberg, certainly not any of the ones that I went to, where they had you had access to the people. You could see who was getting there, who was arriving there. They only had a short distance. You know, we're just across a four-lane road where the people were being let off and into the hotel. And people who were there on a regular basis, Charlie Skelton and his wife, were just amazed. I can't believe we're getting these pictures. And so you just hang out, and you can get a lot of information by just observing and then telling people what you've observed. One of the key things that happened, which really didn't get much coverage outside of the UK, it did get some coverage in the UK, but they had the shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer. They always have that's essentially like our Department Treasury. They always have their people in these different roles. That, you know, if the Labour Party is out, as they were, they have somebody named to all these positions, even though they're not officially filling that. So they call them the shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer or the Treasury. He shows up on a side venue there, and my wife is there with a camera. And he doesn't have his badge. And the guy says, sorry, you can't get him. But I'm Ed Ball. And he was, he started fumbling around. He opens up his luggage, which is like a little rolling airport, you know, bag. And nothing but papers fell out of it. And this is the lie that they tell everybody, well, this is just an informal thing. We're just getting together to talk to each other. There's no business being done here. He's got nothing but a suitcase full of papers. Mm-hmm. And so that got some attention. He was the highest ranking person to lose in the following election. But, you know, you can come up with things like that that'll just fall into your lap if you're there reporting. And so that's the difference with a reporter and a journalist, you know, looking at that. What I do now is different. After I did that for a few years and started doing guest hosting and substitute hosting for Alex, then I got into he gave me my own show in 2017. And I've been doing that since. And when I got fired because I posed him on what was happening in 2020, a lot of different things, and it was just kind of the final straw right after the election, the lies that were coming out. So I posed him on air, and I got fired for that. And I didn't really know what I was going to do. I didn't really have any plans. And I had some people start sending me money on PayPal. I'd never gotten money on PayPal at all with my email. And so I thought, well, that's strange. And it just started building, and I thought, well, I'm going to give this a shot. And the thing that kind of really encouraged me with the lies that Alex was telling about me publicly, so I decided, all right, I'm going to go on and set the record straight. And so it just kind of grew from that. It wasn't really a design on my part.
Yeah, I mean, look, and I've, as I said, interacted with other former employees over there, right? Mm-hmm. Some of them are very good friends. Some of them I've just encountered. Aaron and Melissa is one example. Just encountered him. I don't know him very well. A guy that goes by the name Jack Blood, very early on with Alex. Other people that work as producers. And believe me, as many people as I know, that's as many different variations of how they left the company that could be related. You know, so I wasn't sure how deep you wanted to go into it, but when you're in that position and you know what you've done and you have a level of integrity, which just comes through with you. And this isn't me kissing up to you, because believe me, I'm more than happy to tell you that, you know, listen, you sound he had some other guys that I think were meant to do what you did on there, but they wound up being very dry and very just sort of, you know, mechanical or robotic sounding. They clearly were just reading, you know, what they were told to read, and that was it. It's not even about the information. It's I'm telling you just about performance as somebody who has listened to talk radio his whole life. It was just like, this isn't the same as, right? Mm-hmm. And Aaron was a good example of that, too. I like him. I don't know what you think of him personally or anything, but I like him very much. He's got a good sound. He's a lot more civilized than me again. Jack is more in that guttural area with me. But the thing is, but still more professional because it's me. The thing is, though, there's a way of going about this, and the transition from doing that with that company to doing it on your own, you first see some support, which comes through financially. I get that. But, I mean, did you know, did you feel confident about that? Like, I can definitely do this, or did the idea occur to you? Or?
Yeah, I had been doing the show, you know, for a couple of years at that point. And I did all my research, and, I had some people that would help me and say, you know, pull down this video and that type of stuff. Now I have to do that myself, but I have my sons who work with me some, but I still do all the show preparation myself, but I always did it all myself. And mm-hmm. So none of that changed. It was just whether or not people wanted to hear it, wanted to support it. That was the only question about it.
Well, obviously they have to some degree, because, you know, you can't exist at this point without some level of
people
support.
People have been very good to support it, yes. And mm-hmm. I'm absolutely amazed and overwhelmed with the support that I've gotten from so many people. I, quite frankly, I don't understand it. I've got a passion to tell people what is happening, and especially what has happened these last couple of years just infuriated me beyond belief. And, so that was a key thing of what happened there. Prior to that, I was pretty much left alone to do my own stuff, and I wasn't told what to do. Nobody really is told what to do. It's pretty much, you know, you're on your own. And so it was, you know, that part of it was fine. And I really wasn't told what to do in 2020, but I couldn't be quiet about what I saw happening in other places with it. So I just had to oppose it.
Well, okay, so let's dig into it just a little more. The conservatism. Now, you notice how I tripped over that word? I did that purposely because I'm uncomfortable with even calling what most people call conservatism conservative at this point. I think, in truth, I might actually be a liberal but I'm not a liberal of now. I mean, it's so incoherent. I don't know what to make of what they call liberalism at this point. Maybe I'm a libertarian. It's the only party I've ever registered with, but I'm not even a current day libertarian. It's very weird the way that all of these things, the parameters of being identified sort of in one of those categories has changed. Mm-hmm. And I think it was profoundly obvious when, well, let's just get down to it again. 2015 for me, because I'm talking to a guy like Roger Stone, and I knew Roger for various reasons. But, you know, first time ever, I've got him on my show. And I was profoundly confused that conservatives would embrace Donald Trump. Yeah. So, I don't want to just hover on that, but
what are we trying to conserve here, right?
But what are you conserving, right? I mean, because I always thought of and I was a guy, look, I'm of a very mixed sort of opinion. I'm the kind of guy who got a lot out of listening to Rush Limbaugh in his early days. I'm also a guy who appreciated, various speakers of all philosophical types, every type of American speech that was political to me was of interest if it was coherent. And I appreciated all of it. I'm probably a little more socially liberal than your average conservative, even if we were back to the 1990s definitions. I'm somebody who thinks that, I don't know, crazy things that are very libertarian, like any sort of, the drug war. Let's just hit it straight out. The drug war in and of itself, right? Prohibition on substances, chemicals, is idiocy to me.
It doesn't work, and it's unconstitutional. It always has horrific side effects that are, it destroys everything in society. Creates a more intense form of whatever it is you're trying to prohibit. I mean, everything about it is wrong. Donald Trump, in the 1990s, he did the Playboy interview, but it wasn't the Playboy interview. It was like a week after that or something at an event in Florida. And he gave the truth about the war on drugs. This is simply a government program to build the government, to build their power. It's not helping anybody. And he's somebody who doesn't use drugs. I don't use drugs. I don't need an army of DEA agents to keep me off of drugs. I mean, they can't. They don't keep anybody off of drugs. But, why do we need the 18th Amendment to prohibit alcohol? Because everybody, when they had a modicum of respect for the Constitution, understood that the government doesn't have that authority. And then they brought the 21st Amendment to bring it back. Where are the amendments for any of the stuff in the drug war? It's arbitrary. And now look at where it's gotten us. We have a situation where everything is done by edict, by the regulatory agencies. And that's the ultimate destruction as to where we are right now. Even gun control, being done by executive order with the ATF, with the bump stock now, the pistol braces and other things that have been put forward. It's just horrific what has been done to the Constitution.
Major difference between color of law as opposed to law, first. Mm-hmm. But secondly, we do have this thing called the Constitution. And because of some of the things built in there, look, it is either what stands or it does not. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I look at this with religious freedoms as well. I don't have to agree with you. Okay. I don't have to, this isn't a game of agreement, which is this very strange confusion that's come into play. And I think this is the time period we're talking about. That's why I've gone to these very broad philosophical questions with you, is because, look, you say you're conservative. Well, what does that mean?
I don't really identify myself as conservative either. I spent a lot of time working with the Libertarian Party. What really informs, I would call myself a Christian libertarian. Some people would say that's an oxymoron. I don't see it that way, because I think the founders, regardless of what their personal religious beliefs were, they were setting up a moral framework. You have to have a moral framework. Somebody's morality is going to be reflected in the law. So they had a moral framework that was essentially informed by, Christian principles, but they were focused on liberty. And that's the key thing. And they were very much against party, because they knew that if you focus on party, we're going to have the type of situation we do today. And it's even worse. It's even worse than party, because it's now about a particular person. And I was really sad to see this happen with conservatives. I saw it happening first with Obama. It became a personality cult around Obama. Yes. Then it got even worse with Trump, when Trump came in. But we're getting polarized. And I think that's a sign of the time that we're in. I think we're in a fourth turning, if you're familiar with Strauss and Howe. And I think we're right in the middle of that. There's going to be a tremendous upheaval in our society. I don't think we have even seen, it hasn't even warmed up yet. It's going to get much worse real quickly, I think, in the next few years.
See, but the funny thing is, it's not about your point of view or the liberal resistance to it or anything else. It is actually just about the divide and conquer strategy, yes. The polarization. That is, you know, people say, no, that's the method. No, it's not just the method. That is the point here.
That's right.
Look, if you subdivide people enough, okay, you keep breaking it down enough, you get what? What you have today, which is the individual feed. Mm-hmm. Okay, I know I'm kind of crossing things around a little bit here, but and you'll probably articulate this much better, but this is what I see, is that if you can break us down into small enough groups, there is nothing wrong with a small group. But that means that there can be no collective resistance to a tyrannical situation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you keep us fighting with one another, you can't possibly pay attention to what's happening right in front of your face. Mm-hmm. So, indeed, it doesn't matter which way they're swinging authoritarianism, whether they're claiming that it is benevolent or it is because you don't know how to behave because you're an immoral person, or it's the benevolence of acceptance. Back and forth, you know what? You're still getting hit with it. It's still the same pendulum, and it is tyrannical. That's the funny thing. I don't know how it is that we've gotten to a point where you can't see that someone that is attempting to legislate your morality. Listen, morality is up to you. There is, again, as you said, a certain level of behavior that is instilled in your legal structure. And, of course, a minimalist idea of this is fine. I mean, I personally appreciate the concept of non-aggression, which is very simple. You know, and again, we talked about drugs. We didn't talk about guns yet, but we can talk about all of it. So long as you're not harming someone else, how is any of this my business? And therefore, how is this any of the business of the government, which, by the way, the federal government, you know, that's the supreme, so backwards. The people are meant to be at the top of you. You're looking at this as a pyramid of power. That capstone is supposed to be you and me, the people. Okay? Mm-hmm. We're the ones that are in charge. Everything else comes after that. They don't understand this. And the reason why I said that you had said conservative is because you showed enthusiasm about getting involved with conservative things. So mm-hmm. I said, well, okay. And that was a bad assumption. But you see, that right there gives you a clue that even somebody who's trying to be thoughtful about this is making a mistake. I'm making an assumption you're a conservative right there. It's not my overall thought about you, but I'm just pointing out the mistake I just made in my own language here because I think
the labels the labels just don't serve us anymore. You know, and one of the ways that this thing broke down, I pointed it out, you know, we look at the global authoritarianism, the medical martial law that happened globally. With all these people marching in, you know, lockstep with each other, it didn't matter what political party they were. It didn't matter what their stated political philosophy was. They could be, you know, in Australia, they had the Gladys Berejiklian, one of the worst ones down there. She had a liberal party, which is what we would call the Libertarian Party here. But, you know, it doesn't matter if you were socialist or labor or liberal or libertarian or conservative. They were all doing the same thing. Right. And so we have to start looking at, not at party. We have to not look at the individuals. We have to look at things issue by issue. And I think that's the only way that we're going to get anywhere is looking at things issue by issue. We could try to get people to agree on a philosophical basis that government is there to protect our liberty, that, you know, as the founding documents say, you know, we're given certain things by God just based on our humanity, whether you want to look at it as natural rights or God-given rights. And the purpose of government is to protect those. And when the government becomes destructive of that, it's our right and duty to alter or to abolish that government. And that basically is something that I firmly believe. The principles that are put there in the Declaration of Independence, I think that was very well thought out. And I think that is really what's wrong with where we are right now. As you point out, they want to have chaos. They want to subdivide everybody into competing little groups. Everything that the government does is to pit one group against another. They're not trying to bring us together. They're trying to push us apart. It's clearly obvious that that is the design. And we know why that is the design, because they have a deadline of 2030 where they want to have their new society put into place. And we've had these types of turnings in the past. About every 80 years, Strauss and Howe went back and looked at this pattern. And we usually have, it's when people are, after about 70, 80 years, people get tired of the institutions. The institutions have a lot of obvious flaws in them. A lot of corruption is exposed. And then people, as they're, you know, born at different times, society is different than, you know, a couple, you know, 40 years after a war than it was during the war. But you typically do have an economic upheaval. You have all the institutions change. And unfortunately, you usually have a war. You know, the last four turning we had was the Great Depression, World War II. Prior to that, we had the Civil War. Prior to that, we had the Revolutionary War. They went back and looked at this repeating cycle through English history for about 500 years. My concern is that I think in this time, it is so big, it is so global, that I'm afraid that we're going to have all three of these things at once. I'm afraid we're going to have a Civil War, a Revolutionary War, and a World War all at once. And I think they're pushing us in that direction. They don't want to have peace. They want to have war, and they want to have war between us as well as war with Russia, China, all the rest of these things.
Well, just see here we go, fourth wall just for a second. This is the eloquence I'm talking about. This is why I respect this guy, okay? I'm not talking to you for a second, David. Sorry, hold on a second.
I got it. Fourth wall. I got it. Okay.
This is why, guys. Here, well, that was just put. That's that. The only thing I wish I didn't hear in there is, well, now I'm back to you, David. Only thing I wish I didn't hear in there is fear. I don't think we should be afraid at all. And I'll tell you something else. I think that is another key. That is one of those levers that is utilized. I know how you're using the word fear, but I absolutely despise it. Mm-hmm. I think that fear is one of the most counterproductive things possible. Not legitimate leeriness of things, but I mean, to fear this, I think that that has indeed been weaponized as well. Yes. This concept of the war. How many doomsday cultists, really, truthfully?
Yes. It always is about the fear, and that's what they did with us with the pandemic. I remember, you know, I posed this thing from the very beginning because I'd seen Dark Winter and all these germ games, and RFK Jr. talks about that very eloquently in his Fauci book, Chapter 12. He talks about germ games and how they practice this on an annual basis. So I knew that was exactly what they wanted. I had a source internal who contacted me and said, I'm hearing a lot of stuff about Dark Winter 2. And it's like, ooh, are they going to do this for real? You know, because I knew what Dark Winter was. It's the first simulation they did 2 months before 9/11. And so, you know, I was looking out for this kind of stuff, and I knew that this was around, and I knew what they did on an annual basis to try to sell the flu stuff. But it was a campaign of fear. You're right. And I remember, you know, I wasn't on board with this at all at any point in time, and neither was John Rappaport. And I had him on, and we were talking before that Easter in 2020. And John said, you know, if people would just, if the Christians, who are not supposed to be that afraid of death, you know, they don't see it as the end. They don't want death, but they're not inordinately afraid of it. If they would show up on Easter and have their church services as usual, we could get out of this thing. And that was a big issue. Once the churches started to turn, they had to start arresting pastors. But it was pretty clear. Look, you've got this old demographic of people who are showing up on a regular basis, and they're singing, which you're not supposed to sing, and they're not wearing masks, and they're, you know, next to each other, and they're not falling over dead. Maybe they're lying to me. You know, it exposes it, and you do it by just living your life, you know, without fear. And so I agree. You know, we don't need to have that kind of fear.
Well, and that's what contributed to something that, again, I feel as though almost nobody took notice of. Now, I don't listen to anybody on a regular basis, so maybe you did. I think that you might have been one of the few guys that might have tried to take notice of this. But this was a regional situation. You know, they talked about what happened in, like, say, Australia, which was one of the worst situations when it came to lockdowns and the coding and having people using QR codes to travel, all kinds of craziness.
Yeah. Now, they've done a lot of beta testing for this stuff, haven't they? And it's not going to go away. They've done a lot of psychological conditioning of all of us, and they have left the legal structures in. You know, it's just this last week that they removed the emergency order, one of them. But there's two more, and of course, the FDA has now freed itself from having to have an actual emergency in order to do emergency use authorization. So you have all these hangovers. Plus, they're pulling in the World Health Organization, changing the rules, giving them new powers where, you know, if they can pass these rules and get them signed off in the different countries, then they will have the authority to tell people what to do. and also a treaty involved in that as well. So they have taken their usurpations, and they have essentially, you know, we got drying concrete, if it hasn't already dried. I said, you know, look, they're pouring the concrete around our feet right now. And if it isn't dry, it's going to be pretty dry pretty soon. And they're just going to shove us off the pier here into the water, because that's what we're looking at if we don't pull this stuff back.
No, absolutely. And just like 9/11, by the way, notice nobody is apologizing, really. That's and right. Nobody's losing their jobs again.
That's right. That's right.
All the mistakes that even are admitted on the record about what was done here. Oops, sorry, we destroyed some, you know, independent businesses out there. I mean, all the corporate businesses, with the exception of what? Chuck E. Cheese, I think, was the only thing that went down, right? The big corporate entities. I'm making a joke here, but I mean, literally, that's the only thing that seemed to die in the pandemic that was major corporate, right? But a whole lot of small businesses suffered. A whole lot of people's livelihoods, careers were damaged, destroyed, whether they were performers or they were restaurant owners or whatever it was. A whole lot of damage was done here. Oh, we gave you some COVID relief. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. But anybody say, oops, anybody say, you know, we have to do some sort of, you want to talk about restitution of some kind, needs to be had there. No, 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 no. See, that was all perfectly justified. So as we go forward, hey, look, like you said, they build one off of the other. The legal constructs have been left in place. So you bring me to a couple of things, and I'm hoping we got time enough for them. Bobby Kennedy, you brought him up. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll tell you the truth. I stopped voting some years ago. I really did, because I don't see anything on that menu that I would have ever put on the menu. Yeah. It's that simple. You know, it's not about what did you choose off the restaurant menu. It's did you go to a restaurant that has things on the menu that you would put on the menu? And they had nothing for me for a long time. But, you know, I might have to register once again as a libertarian, because that's the only party I've ever registered with. I might have to do that again, except I might be voting for RFK Jr. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know what you think of that. And I'm not saying he's perfect. Look, I got plenty of issues with a whole bunch of his green stuff and whatever. But I might go that way, and that's coming from somebody who said, I am done with this, you know.
I'm really excited to see him in the debates. And he talks about not just the vaccine thing, and, of course, they're going to come after him with the vaccine. He's going to be more than capable of defending himself with that, because the science is on his side. And I would love to see him in a debate with any of the Democrats who will be running, especially Biden. They think they can debate RFK Jr. on this stuff. Isn't going to happen. And when you look at CBDC, he understands what a central problem that is, how that can enslave us as well. So he's very good on a lot of issues. For the most part, you look at what is typically happening. What did we just have over the weekend? We had the Trump MAGA people put out an ad attacking DeSantis because he allegedly ate pudding with his fingers. This kind of infantile garbage is what, and personal politics and slander and stuff like that, the back and forth, that's what we get outside of it. So I'm really happy to see him there, because we'll be talking about issues. Now, whether or not I could vote for him, I don't know that I could, because of the climate thing. I don't think that's a side issue. And it wasn't that long ago that RFK Jr. was talking about, well, I think these climate deniers, I think they're treasonous and they need to be locked up and all the rest of this kind of stuff. It's like, whoa, this is the kind of thing we're seeing about other issues now if people disagree with us. So he's going to have, maybe he's grown, you know, maybe because of what he's gone through with the vaccine stuff, maybe he's grown. He's going to have to address that issue, number one. Number two, I talk about it in terms of a MacGuffin. Do you know the old Hitchcock thing, right? Okay. Yeah. And so I think that it doesn't really matter to them whether they tell us that we're going to have global cooling and it's going to be a new ice age, or we're going to have global warming and all the ice caps are going to melt, or whether it is a worldwide pandemic. They always have the same measures and the same things that they want in place and the same things that they want to do with us. Take things from us, shut down our society and the rest of the stuff. So I'm just as concerned about the climate thing as I am about the pandemic and the vaccine thing. And I'm very, you know, cautious about what he did. I will say this. I think it is very interesting, because he doesn't believe that, you know, he doesn't believe the JFK official story. He doesn't believe the official story about his father either. He's about the only family member that doesn't. And I had an interview with Dr. Pepper. I think it's Dr. William Pepper.
William Pepper,
who did trials before a jury, presenting evidence to them, both of
really, the, really quickly, the, it is a civil ruling that was held in Memphis, Tennessee in 1999, mm-hmm. and the King family won a civil ruling, which actually ascribed responsibility for death to the government, to organized crime, to a variety of individuals coming from different places, which means a conspiracy, not just the actions of one man named James Earl Ray. Sorry, right. Just for the record, so, that's what and, it was.
Yeah, thank you for refreshing me, because it has been a while. But, you know, he also doesn't believe that Sirhan Sirhan was a lone shooter that killed his father. So right. My point being, is that, you know, I can see other family members, if they believe the official story, they don't worry about getting into politics. But if he looks at this and he believes that it was a conspiracy, that CIA took these guys or whatever, and he decides that he's going to do it, that's a courageous act. And I admire him for that. I agree with him on a lot of these issues that are very important that need to be talked about. I'm happy that they're going to be forced to talk about some substantive issues. And, in terms of full-throated support, like I tell people, I support issues. I don't necessarily support people. And I still have, you know, that pullback with it, you know, to see what's going to happen. But I think it's going to be good to have him in the race. I think so.
Oh, don't take what I said as completely full-throated. What I'm saying is, though, that the potential is there for it, because I actually see someone who apparently, mm-hmm. Has the ability to, I don't know, think and adjust and, you know, reason. You can reason with this man, it looks like. I'm just saying that's the appearance. Now, I could be fooled. It's a possibility. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I thought that Ron Paul would have been a very reasonable and good leader. I'm not necessarily looking for a leader anyway. I don't believe that we actually need them, but that's another subject. Mm-hmm. I like Cynthia McKinney just fine, too, by the way. There were plenty of people that have come along who I would have seen interesting things come from Bernie Sanders even.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think, though, that the problem has gotten so big with Washington that mm-hmm. I think the only way that we're going to be able to stop it is from the outside. And I even think that with CBDC. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got some moves that are being done here in Tennessee, some in Texas and other places. We're going to have to come up with some alternative systems. We're going to have to really think this thing through. And people are proposing some of them, you know, whether it is a publicly owned state bank and a metals depository, or like in Texas, a gold-backed cryptocurrency. We have to have some alternatives that are going to fight against this move to centrally control everything. And I mean everything about our life. And mm-hmm. so these are the types of things. And so part of that is important to see what the president is going to do and these issues being discussed and things like that. But the real solution doesn't lie in Washington. It doesn't lie in the Oval Office. It lies with us. And it has to be a ground up solution, as you're pointing out. We, the people, have to be at the top. Well, we have to start acting like we're the crew, like we're the people who are in charge. We have to start coming with some ideas and start doing things at the local level, or we really are sunk. If we're going to take a passive thing and say, well, I think maybe this guy is going to fix my life for me. Maybe this billionaire will. That is never going to work. Certainly not the way Washington is right now.
That's the thing. Again, if it made it far enough to get on the menu at that terrible restaurant, the problem is, yeah, it went through that process, and only things that get there are what's acceptable and cost efficient, not for you, but for the owners. See, that's the way that works.
Yeah, when everybody was talking about the election, I said, well, you know where the problems of the election start? Starts with the ballot. Then it goes to the debate, because, you know, they've got all these rules to keep any competition off the ballot since Ross Perot got on, and they got all these rules to keep anybody like Ross Perot or any third party or independent out of the debates. And that's not just in the presidential race. That's in the gubernatorial races and most of the races have any substance. They make sure they only have that they control, the two parties control it, both the debate and the ballot access. That's really where the elections get rigged the most and the worst is at that early stage.
Well, that's the funny thing is that, you know, I've never really fought against anybody who said that elections were stolen at certain points, although apparently people have ascribed all sorts of viewpoints to me on this. Truth is, I just simply said, you know, when people were yelling at me about this, how do they steal something from you you don't actually possess in the first place?
Right.
They don't get it. I tell them that.
I don't have a choice.
It's a little difficult. You know, it's like, listen, possession's supposed to be 9/10 of the law. Problem is, if you don't possess it, where is the law on it? You know, you can't, I'm just saying, look, I could take $8 billion from you right now, David. How about that? If you don't have it, it doesn't matter much. Of course, my weenie dog is disagreeing with me in the other room. But whatever it is, I've got one more ugly subject to get to. And unfortunately, you almost diffused it off the top. And none of this is staged or anything, so you had no idea what I was going to ask you about. Again, fourth wall, right? Look, bottom line is this. The gun issue. Mm-hmm. I own guns. I am someone who believes in that. You know, not as an absolutist to the degree that some people are, but, you know, a gun is a tool. And the problem to me, you know, people get into the debates about, well, it's the mental health. No, it's not mental health. It's ease of access to guns. Oh, but kids get them. All of this to me is just a waste of time, a massive distraction. And I'll tell you why. Until we get to a point where we understand, because you take a look at the numbers on this, this is an interesting thing that happens to prevail in the United States a little more than other places, where you have this easier use with the guns, okay? There's places that are war zones. They don't have as many people. They don't have the same percentage of interactions with the guns. I don't think it's the gun at all. I think the problem is that there is a devaluation of life. There is a moral failure here.
Yeah.
And I know it sounds crazy because, again, you did describe yourself as Christian. I got that right, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I don't call myself Christian. I believe in many things. I have a sort of a broad-based faith. But you and I would not disagree on 99 out of 100 things.
Right.
Problem is this. If you take away the value of human life, and I don't mean just in the, you know, oh, well, it's about the media and what they show you. No. That's a small element of it. If it is encouraged upon the people, if they are conditioned, yes, I do believe the masses can be conditioned. If they are conditioned to accept that human life, their lives, the lives of their neighbors, the lives of people who look like them, the lives of people who don't look like them, if they are constantly impressed upon with the idea that nobody's life actually really matters all that much, because if you're in a privileged position, you don't have to pay for killing them, whether it's sending them off to war over, you know, under false pretenses, or it is in the case of over-militarized police, or if it is in the case of just the idiot kid that decides to kill somebody because they disrespected him on the street. All of these things tie to one thing. The supremacy of the idea that human life has a high value is gone from the circumstance, whether it is for a practical cause or whatever. And people do it all the time. And sometimes it's social judgment. You know, it's okay. It was okay when junkies were getting killed with the opioid crisis. It was okay. It's just junkies, you know, because that's just heroin. That's what those people do. Now, when it went everywhere, now it's a problem. I get it. But the thing is, when you get to a point where it's okay to devalue people, whatever the justification is, they're in a different economic, I think, is one of the biggest keys. But the point is that if you get into dehumanizing the enemy, you well know this. You've studied this many times. I've heard you speak on this when about devaluing the life of the enemy. Well, remove the enemy concept from it and put this into your mind. And I don't mean you, David, just speaking out loud to the greater universe. Put this in all your minds. If there is no real intrinsic value to human life, if it's not that big a deal, if it doesn't matter that much, no, the consequence of I lose my freedom is not that big because I don't matter. The consequence that I killed somebody that I know, not a problem. The consequence of killing somebody indiscriminately, not a problem. You see, it's not a big deal. Killing a mouse, almost anybody I've never known, you know, who lives into adulthood has certainly killed a mouse. If you start ascribing, you know, you use a mouse trap, you use a glue trap, some people use humane ones, whatever. But it's very likely that you've used a mouse trap or killed a mouse at some point, somehow, run it over with your car, whatever. If you look at it that way, and that's about how much it bothers you, and I'm not saying people have gotten to that rodent level yet, but clearly to me, that's what it is. If you don't value it because it's more important to have your street cred, it's more important to make your point, it's more important because you snapped and decided you're going to lash back out at your coworkers, it doesn't matter. It's about the fact that there is not this supreme idea that there is a sacred nature to that living being. That to me is the key to the issue, and I don't understand why nobody seems to say this. They want to talk about mental health. They want to talk about laws and regulations and, oh, these kids killed somebody in Florida. Turns out they stole the gun, so wouldn't have mattered if they went to the gun shop or not. It doesn't matter except this key issue. And I think you're one of the very few people that is in this business that would have the courage to face it that way. And I bet that that is exactly how you see it, or maybe you have a better way. Inform me. Help me.
Well, clearly, you know, what immediately comes to mind are things like abortion and eugenics and sterilization and then pedophilia and how we're using kids. But just look at the way we were all treated in 2020 and 2021. We were all told your life doesn't matter. You have to do this for the collective. You have to do this for public health. And I said over and over again, look, if you're going to disregard the health of the individuals, there's no such thing as public health. Public health is just the health of a lot of individuals. And the same thing is true of liberty. If individual liberty doesn't matter, if the only thing that matters is the safety of the herd, then you have lost everything. And that really is the dividing line. You know, when people talk about the fact, do we have a democracy or do we have a constitutional republic? Constitutional republic recognized people as individuals, as something that was special, created in the image of God. They talked about that. What does that mean? Well, you know, that means that, you know, some people say, well, that means we've got natural rights, but humans are different and we cannot, you know, the government is there to protect that. And if you're going to strip that away and say you're nothing more than just a cog in the machine, and the machine is what matters, the individual doesn't matter. We know what that looks like and we know what that results in. We've seen that in authoritarian societies throughout the 20th century over and over again. And that is the fundamental way that these people rule. They say, well, you know, we're doing this for the overall good of all the people, but they're not. They're doing it for their own good. That's the reality of how this works. But we can see this happening to us in the last 2 years. For our lives, our choices, none of that matter.
No, exactly. And the other thing is that poverty in combination with this, the other ways that the society has been engineered, not just in the past couple of years, the groundwork. The stuff, again, I'm guessing that you and I are not of a too dissimilar age, that we might have been alive in the 1970s. It wasn't like this then, and it's not the internet's fault. There has been a constant down. You know, here we go. I'm almost referencing in my mind again the conservative talk shows from the 90s, not just Limbaugh, but there were others that were talking about this, you know, decline of our civilization. Mm-hmm. Fact is, decline, yes, but nobody's taking notice, I feel like, that it is about this devaluation of human life. And here's the thing. Somebody might say, well, I don't want to hear about God's plan because how do you know what God's plan? Look, remove God, even. You can still handle this. By virtue of your creation, not even talking about intelligence on it, by virtue of your creation, you have these natural rights. They're not granted by the government. The government is supposed to be there to protect them. Yeah. But that's it. That's their role. They didn't give them to you. They were created because you were created. You know, I think, therefore, I am. That's an important thing. And the thing is, you don't even need to have, you know, and again, I believe in higher powers. I believe in a hierarchy of higher powers. Story for another day. Not going to get there because I've got David Knight with me, and we're actually out of time. So here's the deal. I want you to tell them about when they can listen to you live. Obviously, sure. Almost nobody. Look, just go ahead and use a search engine. Hopefully it's not Google. Use a search engine and go find David Knight.
I don't really show up on the search engines. It's thedavidknightshow.com, and that's where you'll find me. Probably not in the search engine where they really have purged me with this stuff, or social media either. I'm on Twitter at Libertarian. You'll find me there. I'm on Gab at David Knight there, but go to thedavidknightshow.com. That's where you'll find the links to the show. We're live every Monday through Friday from 9 to noon, and we broadcast live on Rumble and on Rockfin, on Odyssey, and Twitter, and then we put the full show up. We put some cuts from the show up each day, and then we also have a podcast version, and that's really where most people catch it, and it's on all the podcasts except for Spotify. Spotify has censored me over and over again.
Spotify?
Spotify.
Wow. Yeah. You don't have a YouTube presence anymore, do you?
No, I was kicked off of YouTube 8 times. They even took down my music channel where I put up Christmas music that I played.
they took away everything from me on YouTube, and I was there for 15 years.
Isn't that awful? I just hate it. And they didn't tell me, they gave me 3 strikes and you're out. It's just like, they sent me this thing, a complaint has been received and we deleted your channel. It's like, a complaint? Can I even know what that complaint is? No, I got that little message 8,000 times over 2 months. They would never respond to anything that I sent to them. But yeah, I'm not on YouTube or Facebook or any of the big platforms. If you go to thedavidknightshow.com, outside of the gatekeepers, outside of the walled gardens, there you can see where you can catch the program. And again, I'm pretty much on all of the podcasts that I know of, except for Spotify. They shut me down.
Right. And those are the audio versions that go out to like Apple and all that.
Yes, goes out to iTunes and iHeart and, even Google for right now, because Google doesn't know I'm there. If they know I'm there, they'll kick me off.
Yeah, I've not been able to figure that out. They kill me in the search engine and I'm still on Google Play for some reason. I don't understand that at all. That is the weirdest thing. And I've also been kicked off YouTube.
They're going to fix that. The podcast thing right now, they're not looking at it, but I think they'll use AI to go through and find us and kick us off of the podcast as well. But right now you can still find us.
Well, you do know business-wise, YouTube is now pushing their own very specialized podcast feeds now. It's not like it was before. Now they're going into the business of it. Hold on to your hats for that. I'm sure it'll be all kinds of unsanitized. Anyway, I follow David Knight on Twitter. I would advise that you follow him there because it's very easy. You can pick up visual elements and stuff like that. I'm going to give you guys links to thedavidknightshow.com, right?
Yes, that's it.
Okay. Wanted to make sure, people, you gotta check with the .coms. I mean, mine is, everybody's got mine wrong too. I just put my last name there. That's it, because I figured nobody would steal it. So I'm just Ocelli.com, but you want to catch everything that is David Knight, except for, wait a minute, the Knights of the Storm. Yeah, they're linked through there too, and they have a whole thing too as well. So you know what? You can check out their stuff.
We've got a lot of different program schedules for a lot of different podcasts that are good, that are building right now.
Right. Pretty new. Yeah. They're connected to you, but to go to the man himself, thedavidknightshow.com, and you got to put all that into your search engine. But you know what? It's easy to bookmark, and that's that. And like I said, if you're completely mentally lazy about it, well, you probably don't want to listen to David Knight's show in the first place. But if you do, and you just happen to be on Twitter, if they haven't kicked you off there, even though we are all being shadow banned in various shades of gray at this point, you can still find David Knight on Twitter, I assure you. So he's there, he's on Gab, he's on Rumble, he's on all the video platforms, and I'm really happy that you were here today, David. I know I'm a little bit unorthodox in my approach, but really appreciate your patience, indulgence, and one of these days, I think one of these days we might encounter each other somewhere. I'd love it if you went to Dallas for the 60th anniversary of the assassination, because I'm trying to get a whole bunch of people down there, but I know how it is, and
Coming up this year. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, this year.
Yeah, really. Yeah. And I'm going to be doing, there's conferences there and stuff like that. But I'm also having a little special get-together kind of that do the kind of thing that, well, I don't do something comparable to you. You do it much better, much smoother, and you do video and all kinds of stuff. You're a more respectable guy. But if the world wasn't in such a crap state right now, I would be more than happy to be a music spinning DJ. Would make me really happy. I'd be just spinning music and making little quips up in between records and reading local tire commercials. That would be happiness for me. But I can't, because this is the way things are. I have children, and I think we can do better. So anyway, David Knight, I want to thank you once again, because I know a lot of people are going to be surprised that you even took the time to come on the Ocelli Effect. And
it's been
a
pleasure, Chuck. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And you guys out there, I bet it was a surprise. David Knight, telling you, cool guy. I respect him, and I know you should too. So there
you
go.
So much. I appreciate it. You've been very kind. Thank you so much.
And I appreciate you, sir. So no matter who you are, where you are, when you are, remember this. I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. Go to thedavidknightshow.com and follow up on him. And, tune back over to me sometime. I know he's smoother to listen to. But, anyway, appreciate you guys. Take care.
Support Chuck Ocelli at Ocelli.com. there's no money in it. So
yeah, that is
the problem.
That's the biggest problem, I think. And, you know, some people would say that, look, you're in an age when you can be independently supported. But quite frankly, I'm on that business model, too. And look, I'm not going to complain, but I'm going to complain. Okay, because people want to support you. They love you to death, but honestly.
So if you're listening in, this is a very unsubtle request to support the damn show. And I want you to do this, too, because, you know, the Acelli Report is one of the few places where Greg Palast can get his stuff out. I mean, you'll still see my bylines in some of these outlets, but nevertheless, I used to be a regular on CNN and on MSDNC, but no more.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold.
Silver.
The stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Go there now.
Go there now.
Go there now.